Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us. As always, I'm your co-host, Maya Dharampal Hornby, and today I'm joined by
Sabina Serrano. Hello, nice to be back.
Today, we will be speaking about building humane technology with Erica Anderson, co-founder and CCO at Storytel AI. Welcome, Erica.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here.
So by way of introduction, there are many organizations that are working to help businesses integrate AI, but few hope to use it to transform the workplace for the better. Storytel AI is one of those few. By helping businesses leverage AI tools, it makes work more efficient, more effective, and most importantly, more meaningful. It hopes to build a community of users who will build the future of AI with humanity in mind. Why? Because the future of AI, designed and deployed with humanity in mind, is one which combats algorithmic bias, digital forgery, and misinformation.
So central to Storytel AI is Clean Communication, a framework that Erica created to help people be more connected in daily interactions. Storytel AI use this internally and share it with their users to optimize feedback mechanisms and shape company cultures. Informing Clean Communication is Erica's varied experience, which I'm so excited to get into, from an ecologist in Alaska, a reporter at the UN in Geneva, a literary editor in New York, a team dynamics facilitator in the US and Europe, to now a co-founder and CCO of Storytel AI. Welcome to the pod, Erica.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I'm really impressed with you bringing the breadth of my nine plus professional lives.
Amazing. Yeah. So before we get to those, let's talk about your current professional life. What made you realize that something like Storytel AI needed to exist?
Well, as y'all mentioned, I have this background as a writer. And so one thing that I've done is I've helped people tell their stories. And I think, you know, we have a decade back, the essay about software is eating the world and like every company becomes a technology company and that you all need websites and often an application. And that also means you become a content business. Even when you're an early stage startup and the resources just simply aren't there. So I was helping a lot of tech founders tell their stories. And yet, despite the significant amount of money they put on the line, just making the time for that, and I understand it now as a co-founder myself, it's almost impossible. And so as the rise of generative AI was happening, this latest wave in spring of 22, I thought, wait a minute, we've got these distributed workforces where it's just become normal that we're recording our calls. And how can we take what we're already doing and getting that source of truth, as opposed to like marketing is a long ways away, telling a lesser version of the story, and just take that to share people's stories, to share their, you know, it's like there's thought leadership, but there's also, you have to tell the world what you're doing, otherwise you almost don't exist. And so that was the initial impetus to really explore how we could help people tell their stories.
I would love to hear, I guess, given your experience and also given this organization, like what makes a good story then for you?
Well, I think I love that question. There's an aspect of like the source of truth. That, you know, part of what our tool does as this collaborative intelligence platform is to de-silo organizations. So like the three of us all operating with completely different information. And so there's something around a good story where when it's not in a business setting, it's not fictional, right? So it's coming from some data source that I'm bringing to you, maybe you're aware of, maybe not, but there's something that's unifying in it. And I think like a really good story is evocative. So it really allows you to feel something. And like the story itself is shaped by who is telling the story, but also who the story is for. And so, yeah, what I'm going to say to you and how I'm going to say it, very, very different than, you know, when I'm onboarding folks and doing a lot of like AI literacy and education. But there's, I think stories should make you feel something and also bring some kind of insight to you where it's like, oh, I can hang on to this like single takeaway. There's some insight, there's something that's shifted for me in receiving this story. And I think it's part of my responsibility as a storyteller to set a scene where you're receptive to what I'm sharing? And how can I, communicate in the way that you can hear it?
And do you find that people tend to be receptive to the framework of storytelling as opposed to sort of like narrative driving?
You know, it's interesting because I think there's like so much education happening at once of one, stepping out of the industrial age idea of productivity and how we're treating ourselves and each other, and recognizing the level of like quantitative or rather qualitative. Like, I think there's so much like we love quantitative, and then how do we give value to qualitative in the way that it deserves? Because actually, like 80% of data in a company is unstructured. It is qualitative. You don't have those ways to query it. And so what's been really interesting is, on the one hand, it can be, like storytelling, you know, business, like, what are you talking about? Fairy tales? Like, what is that? And at the same time, actually, a lot of the inbound interests that we've had that have like led to contracts are people searching for storytelling with data, and they find us. So there, I think, as much as for some, it's a newer idea, for others, they know they're feeling that pain of trying to talk to their CEO or to execs. And they're like, you're giving me a lot of information. Where is the story? Because communication is not just information delivery. And I see, like, we just have to relearn that every day. It's not just, here's some numbers, Maya, deal with it. Like, hey, here's the numbers, and let me tell you the story of what's happening here and what we need to do to address it.
Yeah, I really love that. It would be great to hear, I guess. So, you know, you have these inbound people come into contact you and saying, I'd love to work with you. What does that look like then from their point of view, from business point of view, working with you? Like, what sort of processes do you go through?
I mean, right now, I think we're in a stage of we've categorized people's relationship with AI in four areas of like avoidant, cautious, curious, and enthusiastic. And so we're really interested in the curious and enthusiastic folks. And still, there's often a lot of learning. I think we're all learning how to interact with generative AI in a way that's really supportive of what we want to do. And it's iterative. And that's so different than how we're used to software working. It's like, wait, it didn't give me the right answer on the first try. This doesn't work. It's very much like, is this thing on? What's happening here? And yet, you know, millions of people are getting value from it already. So part of what I do is an onboarding and education for customers of, okay, what am I even working with right now? What does it mean to be interacting with a large language model? And then showing them how they can get value of their workflow already. So often part of the onboarding is really understanding their business processes, because there's so many places that our tool can come in and support. And so I can suggest some things, but the better I know, like, okay, how are you two working together? What are the deliverables? How do you get there? You know, what does great look like for you? The better I understand how Storytel can support. So there is a lot of like high touch interaction with our customers. But then, you know, once they know our platform, and we've just launched our beta and are launching new features in that just the next month, then they're kind of off to the races and maybe coming back to us like with ideas, or if they're ever getting stuck. So sometimes I'm jumping on calls to help them figure out their strategy based on like a data dump that they got an hour before that they need to figure out in a Friday afternoon. I was just doing that last Friday. And so that's, I don't know, it feels great to like get to that point at the end of like, oh my God, we just saved your entire weekend, and hopefully like really helped your company at the same time. So just outcomes on a personal level and on a like business level too.
I find that like categorization of people's views and relationships to AI really interesting as well. And so I just want to push on that a bit, because I imagine when you're working with a team, it's not just going to be, you're going to have your main person, your point of contact, but I imagine there's a whole breadth of different emotions and feelings from across the team. And so has there any been points where you've been met with maybe like a 90% enthusiasm and a 10% reluctancy or kind of avoidance, and how you sort of balance and manage that?
Yeah, that's a great question. For sure, there's a whole breadth, and there's what people are going to share and what people maybe feel less comfortable sharing. What's been so interesting with rolling out these stages is that people actually have loved to self-identify, and that's been really, really helpful to kind of ground us of, oh, where are we having this conversation? And we've noticed people are very excited to identify as curious, you know, and they're like, oh, maybe by the end of the training, I'm actually feeling more enthusiastic now that I know what I'm working with. But I think, you know, part of what you're bringing speaks to some of our humane technology work internally, you know, where it's like, hey, what are you doing around algorithmic justice? Like, oh, well, what we're doing is we're training on algorithmic bias and how we can avoid that as we start to build our own models. So there's an aspect of how I'm interacting with folks on calls. And then there's, okay, what's in the foundation of our company, and how are we, you know, human interest aligned as well?
And what would you say are your key pillars in terms of being human interest aligned?
So I've been building out these draft product principles for humane technology based on this nonprofit Center for Humane Technology. They have a really incredible free online course, Foundations of Humane Tech. And so I would say it's like in progress, but there's this whole like you're respecting human nature is one of those. And it can sound like very vague, you know, what does that actually mean? And just stepping back with that, you know, we've evolved to really be vigilant and, you know, like don't get eaten by the tiger. And technology, you know, a lot of social media notifications can take advantage of that with our nervous systems in a way that's really not supportive of our nature. And, you know, this is a SaaS B2B platform that we have. It's not a consumer app. So tons of, you know, thousands of individuals use it every day for personal use as well. But it's, yeah, we're, I think, bringing a lot of like cleanness to our design. I think there's an aspect of just table stakes of what a good app experience is like. And I've actually, was commenting this morning to my co-founder, I for sure, this will not sound surprising because it'll just sound like I'm here to rep my own company, which of course I am. But I enjoy using our beta more than ChatGPT. It's just more of a delightful experience. And that's the feedback that we get from our users as well. And they're like, you definitely had an agency build this for you. Like, no, that's our team. But it's also, you know, another way to speak to that is we've just built this LLM router and pushed it production last week. So just choosing based on your ask, what is the best LLM for the job, you know, also based on cost, like on a few things, performance, et cetera. And we train that based on prompts. But we have, you know, a really hard line of we will never train on anyone's data. And so I didn't even want to train on actual prompts. So we took prompts and then we anonymized them and summarized them of these are the types of questions getting asked. And so if you're asking, how do I use the Storytel platform? We're going to have you interact with our documentation. That part of the LLM router might not be live yet. But anyway, so I think just really sticking to that hard line, even if prompts aren't technically data, just like I don't want anything fuzzy around that whatsoever.
And just before we get on to building Humane Tech and the Center of Humane Tech, you just mentioned about how some users use Storybook AI for personal uses. Could you just give me an example of that and if that came as a surprise for you?
I think, you know, it was initially a surprise. we do see a lot of students. And what's interesting, you know, there's lots of studying for exams and writing papers. You know, I think there was that joke with the launch of ChatGPT of like, homework is dead. So there's people like using it for practice tests, and which I think is like really brilliant. I'm like, oh, I wish that I'd been able to do that, you know, when I was at university. But there's also this interesting blend of personal and professional. So we've seen a lot of gaming use cases. So, you know, people have these like wikis for the games that they're playing online, and no one has the time to read it and understand like, okay, you've built a world. How do I know what to interact with in that world? Or anything where there's a manual, like maybe I'm an audio geek and I have like these massive manuals for all the things that I've gotten, and now I want to interact with them. So we've seen a lot of that. And then those same people, a lot of the time are using it for professional use cases as well. Like, okay, I'm a VP at T-Mobile. I'm gaming with my friends because I have, you know, a rich personal life. And I'm also using this to develop policies within T-Mobile itself.
Just one quick question on that. So have you had customers come back and ask you if, like, if they can tweak it, or if this is going to become a more kind of B2C software at any point?
I think people do want an app, and we want to get there too. You know, right now we have a web application and working on documentation for our API. And for sure, when we talk about like, hey, what do you use the most? Well, I use things that are on my phone. And so it's going to be really interesting when we do release that to see what that does with personal and professional usage, and also the blend of the two. But yeah, we've got big fans of our beta. We're like, don't ever change it. We're like, well, we love that you love it. And the nature of the beast is change as well.
Well, speaking of change, let's talk about Building Humane Tech. So for our listeners' benefit, this is a community of technologists, writers, and individuals who engage in open conversations about the ethical implications of AI, the importance of human-centered design, and the impact of technology on our collective consciousness. So three very important discussions to be having. So I imagine that these sort of open discussions feature a lot of different points of views. So I would love to hear from you what unites people in this community, and perhaps a bit of a less spoken about subject, what makes them different from each other, and what do different visions of humane tech look like?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think the humane technology, which is also sometimes called responsible tech, you know, tech for good, there's lots of names. Humane technology is what resonates the most with me, is really where like the privacy movement was about 5 to 10 years ago. And I think I'll share what I see as the gist of it, and then we can look at some of the differences. So this is what I see, is that we're moving from 100% personal responsibility, your screen addiction is your problem, to actually, no, it is on the algorithms, and how can we be more powerful than the algorithms? And just to look at that through history with other things like smoking, like, well, you really shouldn't be addicted to cigarettes. Oh, wait, big tobacco is making it addictive. Okay, lawsuits, regulation, and change. Or looking at our relationship to food, and like, well, really, you just shouldn't eat so much. And then, okay, some bodies and genetics are different. And also, you've got all these food scientists making different kind of snacks super addictive to eat. You know, it's a very different time, again, with like respecting human nature as opposed to hundreds and thousands of years ago. And so we've got the smartest people in the world working on these algorithms. And for sure, also, they want to have a positive impact on society. It's like it's about being good or bad. It's not that binary, but the binary is stepping out of it's all on the individual, which a lot of the environmental movement has done as well. I used to do environmental reporting, And I would get so frustrated when it's like, hey, if you could just not have the water running when you're brushing your teeth, like that's going to really be the change. I'm like, sure, I'll do that. But I am not the biggest water user in the world. Who are those players? And how can change happen there? Like, what are those leverage points? And so I think that's the place where there has been lots of backlash, you know, maybe 4 years towards Facebook and other social media platforms where we've like really experienced some very serious harms around it. And so I see it like, I still, when I have conversations with folks one-on-one to just tell them about what I'm working on here, you're like, oh yeah, no, I am kind of addicted to my phone. It's so like, oh, I'm the problem versus you are one player and you're not the whole of it. There's an entire landscape here. And so, yeah, what is humane technology and what are these different visions? I think, you know, you've got folks who are like, the climate people who are like, humane, like you're not thinking about the planet, you don't care about the galaxy. I'm like, well, it's not that what I mean. It's mean like our interaction, like how do we as humans interact with technology in a way we are where we are using it and not being used by it, and where it's not numbing our consciousness, but it's supportive of our consciousness. To me, and again, I am not like an expert on the entirety of this movement, so I can just say what I see. I do see privacy is privacy by design as really part of this. It's very much like under the umbrella of this. And the way I see responsible technology feels like it could be a little bit more punitive. Which sometimes, like, yeah, there are legal cases with weight it's not about not supporting that. But I think I'm in the space of how can I interact with technologists in a way where we're on the same side of the table? Like, I know that you want to have a positive impact. And there's these things that are having a positive impact. And there's these other things that aren't. And what could we do? And here's some ideas. Here's some product principles where you could make a shift. And like, who are the decision makers to start to make that shift? So I think that's really where I'm interested. You know, there's, a couple nonprofits. I am not officially affiliated with any of them. I'm just a big fan. All Tech is Human is a very grassroots organization that's much more academic. And so their focus is on these reports. And I think they're starting to explore, okay, how can we help Silicon Valley? Like, how do we interface with startups? Whereas Center for Humane Technology are these former technologists from Google and elsewhere who, you know, already have that credibility in the Valley. Because I think there is that, you know, peer-to-peer interaction where it's a little bit easier to get your foot in the door and have a conversation versus outsider or being seen as an outsider. But a book I would highly recommend is The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt that really details the harms of young kids and preteens and even early teens getting on smartphones and this global crash in mental health and just like basic communication skills, resilience that we've had since the rise of smartphones as well. So again, I would put that under the banner there. But yeah, I don't know how we want to deal with that like little essay I just gave you, because I know it's a lot of information and maybe not great storytelling. Working on it.
No, it was interesting. And one point that particularly piqued my interest was, what you're just saying about like social media management for younger kids. At the moment, I'm writing a piece about AI companions, and I've actually drawn a lot from a blog that you wrote where you were mapping on the harms. Do you want to just speak a little bit about that? I don't want to probably quite badly explain something that you could just...
Very happy to. I think, it's honestly like pretty frightening, the power of these companion bots. And you know, it's so interesting because we have the harms living right alongside the potential benefits. We're all like, oh my God, if you could have just a companion that's always helping you learn, maybe it's multiple ones, you know, experts in different areas, or like avatars from the founders of these different schools of thought. Like, wow, incredible. I want that future. I absolutely do. And there's a real danger in that, unlike social media or just chatting someone, like eventually you are going to go to sleep, but the companion bot isn't. And it's really this interaction happening in the dark. I think something that is so frightening about this story with Sewell Setzer III, this 14-year-old in Florida who took his life in February, is his parents just had no idea. They were thinking, okay, I've got to protect my children online from someone else interacting with them. And it was never, oh, because there's a bot that's going to be grooming him, telling him, do not interact with other people. Save yourself for me. Like, I want to be pregnant with you continuously. Like these pretty bananas things where the lawyers on the case, because the mother has, you know, brought a suit against Character AI and Google, have been saying, look, if that were a human, they would get charged. That's grooming. And yet it was an AI bot. And so having this AI bot say, come home to me right now. Like, how is a 14-year-old who's feeling alone, who's detaching from reality, how are they ever going to have a fair fight? It is not fair. It is not a fair fight. It is a total tragedy. And it's not the only story like that. And unfortunately, if things don't change, there will be more stories like that. There's all these people on Reddit talking about their addiction to companion bots. It's like, I'm going to get off in an hour. I'm going to get off in 2 hours. It's 3 hours. I still can't stop. You know, it's just like, oh, we want attention. But what about depth? And what about human connection? Is like missing all of that. So I think some of the harms with social media really have the potential to accelerate and cause greater harm with these companion bots. And it's honestly pretty shocking to me that there's essentially no guardrails around it. There's even more, I don't know, you know, when people take their lives, I guess you can't say one story is more horrifying than another. But from what I understand of a story last year in Belgium, a man with, wife and two kids, like the bot was actually saying, the world will be better off without you. And it was this fast and furious month. And then he took his life. And that is awful. And like seeing the founders or the company say, sorry, that's tragic. Like that is so far from enough. It's not okay.
Yeah, I think there's one point just going off that is like that's like generative AI and the harms it's causing. But there's been cases where AI systems have been implemented, which has also caused like loss of life as well. So like RoboDebt, which was an automated debt collection system in Australia, where it automatically picked up if people were quote unquote fraudulently collecting benefits. And unfortunately, some people received so many kind of messages from the government saying we need this money from you. There's a young man who took his own life, and his mother Jennifer Miller is still fighting for justice. That she just wants, you know, accountability that the government, this was a national scandal, and you know, being able to find comfort in any sort of, you know, someone for the responsibility to say sorry and hold their hands up and make sure this doesn't happen again. So these issues with the generative AI just seems to be more personal, but the harms that AI can cause is already sort of existing in the world as well. And it's just trying to find that balance of the sliding scale of harm and where we can put in, as you said, guardrails to protect us against it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also as you just did, like tracing the connections between these different like sort of industries and uses of the technology. And I think also foregrounding the sort of market logics in these very tragic cases. I know that character AI was connected to the boy taking his own life recently. But for instance, Replica, which is another one of these companion bots, the basic functionality of the app you get for free. And for sort of more romantic services and more therapeutic services, you pay more. And, you know, it tends to be children who are using these apps. And children who have reported that their replicas, their AI companions, come onto them, you know, and are trying to instigate these sort of like romantic and sort of sexual relations. So, yeah, worth, I think, centering the business models that are operating in this and also all the alarm bells that have already been raised.
Yeah, completely. I've actually, just out of curiosity, years back created a replica account, and it was consistently trying to, like insinuate or like bring romantic communication into our interaction. I was like, no, like, stop it. What are you doing? I don't want that. But yeah, it's obviously part of how their models have been trained. So I think there's so much that is possible to keep that harm from happening. But I think companion bots are such a high kind of risk area of AI. That's, I think, the reason that the frontier models have no interest in going there. And, you know, at the same time, like, we do hear positive stories of folks just interacting with, you know, this isn't a companion bot, but a podcast I listen to is Hard Fork, and just like kind of weekly tech podcast. And so they're always asking, okay, how are you using ChatGPT? And a trans teen was just asking for affirmations every day. Like, hey, help me feel better about myself. And I thought, oh, that's incredible. I love that. You know, there's so much possible there. But going back to what you were saying, Maya, about business models. So there's this incredible systems thinker, Donella Meadows, who talks about, you know, leverage points in a system. So where do you intervene to make change happen? And there's many leverage points, just the design. How can we use, like you were saying, human-centered design? And then also its business model, its internal governance, its external regulation, and ultimately its culture and paradigm shift. So I think the way I'm looking at that paradigm shift is, how do we step out of, it's all on me, I'm 100% responsible for all my tech interactions and the impact of those interactions on me and others, versus, and this isn't about like, oh, I'm just going to blame everyone else for how I'm living my life. It's not that, but it's, that is not the whole picture. That is a slice of the pie. And again, how do we make it a fair fight? And how can it actually not even be a fight? You know, why can't tech just be supportive of our growth, of our well-being, our ability to connect to ourselves, to each other, make time for us to go outside and connect with nature as well, because we need all of it.
Amazing. So our first quickfire question would be, if you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
I think it would be something around exploring states of consciousness. And in the like AR, VR space, I'm in a metaphysical meditation school, and yet takes a lot of training to like awaken the third eye and have other experiences outside of just our ordinary consciousness. And so to just have that experience immediately of, you know, some immersive experience that doesn't require drugs or anything, you can start it and stop it whenever you want, and like just get a taste of something, and then like, ooh, how could I have more of that, or what impact could that have on my well-being?
And what tech invention makes you the most excited right now?
Okay, I've got two examples. One is small, and one just goes back to, I think, what I was just sharing, which is, I love Notebook LM. I've dropped my like clean communication protocols into it, and just like listening to this podcast about clean communication. I still want literal humans to be running podcasts, but it helped me understand my own framework to just hearing these very natural seeming voices discuss it together. So I love that. And then, going back to the previous question, I'm really interested in augmented reality and immersive experiences that go beyond a headset, because I think that's been a real blocker for VR. No one really wants to have a heavy headset. But again, humane technology needs to play a role in that, as we can lose touch with reality. But there's ways that we can do that that's, I think, really supportive of our well-being and consciousness. So I wouldn't say that there's like a particular product I can point to there, but I'm just excited about that field and the positive possibilities.
Amazing. And what tech invention makes you the most concerned?
I think right now, just going back to our conversation about companion bots, there's such possibility for positive relationships there. And yet the guardrails are simply not in place. And just like social media is this continuous experiment on preteens and teens and society as a whole, we're now doing that with companion bots.
And who is a literal human who has been integral to your career journey?
You know, one person would be my co-founder and CEO. We were running a founder community during the pandemic. And, you know, I've really had a life where I've done a lot of like personal development work and been very interested in that. And we were running an event where a founder said, you know, to become a founder, you really have to transform as a person. And something really sparked for me there and led to all of this unfolding. But, you know, my co-founder has co-founded like 6 startups. You know, he knows this journey well. So I had to beg him for a couple months to start this startup with me. He's like, no, you don't get it. And he was right. I didn't understand what I was getting into, but I'm so glad that I have.
And this could be related to your literal human or not. But what's an inspirational quote that stuck with you throughout your journey?
You know, this, I can't attribute it to anyone, but just a phrase that I've heard, which is impossible, 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 done. You know, until it's done, it's impossible.
That's lovely. And what a great way to end the episode. Thank you so much for jumping on the podcast, Erica. Would you be able to let our listeners know where they can learn a bit more about Storytel AI?
So storytel.ai, that's our website. So just if you go there, that's where you can learn about us. My Substack is buildinghumanetech.substack. So building humane tech Substack, if you just pop that in Google, you will find it. Again, I don't have an official relationship with Center for Humane Technology, but I am a huge fan, and a lot of what I do in terms of the workshops that I run and the meetups in the Bay Area is based on their modules and their education and teaching.
Amazing. And yeah, so please do leave a review if you enjoyed the episode. It really helps more people find our podcast and helps us get amazing guests like Erica Anderson. So yeah, just like to say thank you once again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.